You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for June 10th, 2022. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where, back during this week in 2014, our podcast was introduced as follows. Recorded live from just outside the Laura Logan Perpetual Employment Project, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Hey, Blue Gal.
Hi. And this is an interesting story. It is fun to go back and look at what were we doing on this date on Twitter or on the podcast or on our blogs. It's great to have archives. We have archives in lots of different places.
Yes, we
and
do.
And so tell us about why Laura Logan jumped out at you today.
Well, this was 2014, and this was back before Donald Trump had ever come down the escalator. It was back when David Brooks was confidently reporting the GOP was in great shape and there was nothing but blue skies ahead. And it's because in 2014, Laura Logan had just returned to work at CBS after she was forced to take a leave of absence after her giant, fake, scary Benghazi story on 60 Minutes. It all fell apart. And that was the story that had supercharged the dying embers of the GOP's current favorite Kenyan usurper fairy tale. Now, there's one fun fact that if you remember this at all, you might not remember this piece, which is that the fake, scary Benghazi book on which Logan based her story had been published by Threshold Editions, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster Publishing, which is owned by, surprise, CBS. Threshold was set up by Simon & Schuster once they saw what a lucrative market there was in selling schlock to wingnuts. So after Logan was taken off the air, certain liberals who on this podcast cynically predicted that she would be probably be forced to sit out in the naughty corner for no longer than the industry standard 30 days, or as we call it, doing the full Halperin. Then after a little longer than 30 days, surprise, surprise, she was welcomed back to 60 Minutes, where she was allowed to stay until her contract ran out. Now, shortly after her contract ran out and she was cut loose, she was hired by Sinclair Broadcasting. Maybe you've heard of them.
Uh-huh.
And then after she was hired by Sinclair Broadcasting, she was hired by the Fox News streaming service. After that, she filed a $25 million lawsuit against New York Magazine for their story about her fake Benghazi story, complaining that their story had hurt her career and caused CBS to cut her salary from $2.15 million per year down to a mere $750,000 per year. And that case was thrown out of court. So there she is over at Fox News until a couple of years later, Fox News cut her loose because she compared Dr. Fauci to Joseph Mengele.
Now, at what point in all of this history did she get physically attacked?
This was prior to any of this.
Okay. Because at one point she got quite violently physically attacked in the Middle East. She was working.
She was.
And it's horrible. It's just horrible what happened to her.
Damaged her for life. And it was a tragedy, and it happened to her, and it happened to her while she was reporting overseas, correspondent overseas. She was a rising star at CBS.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she was on 60 Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then she couldn't stop herself from falling down the rabbit hole. First, she reported this bullshit Benghazi story that was – the book was bullshit. The book was published, as I said, by CBS. And then somebody bothered to check the facts and said the guy's just making this whole thing up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then down and down and down we go. At any point along here, she could have just not done the next stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
But she did. And these days, she can be found hugging up to Kyle Rittenhouse at Mar-a-Lago, showing up as a guest on right-wing podcasts or speaking at rallies for fringe causes, promoting falsehoods about deaths from COVID vaccines and conspiracy theories about voter fraud. And her latest project is a forthcoming documentary on voting machine scandals called Selection Code that's being financed by Mike Lindell.
Wow.
That is the bottom of the barrel. And we open today with Laura Logan's professional biography because of how closely it parallels the inexorable downward spiral of the GOP in general.
Mm-hmm.
And P.S., Herschel Walker, you know him, is running ads on Gab.
Yeah, Gab is now a place where U.S. Senate candidates can run advertising.
Yeah, because
Herschel Walker... White nationalist, unapologetic white nationalist communication website.
Yeah, Gab. It's a garbage site for garbage people. And Herschel Walker, who literally cannot string a sentence together. Charlie Pierce said, can't find his way from a noun to a verb.
Yeah,
on any subject. It's just gibberish coming out of his mouth. Is the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
Because Donald Trump put his hands on his head and said, this is my guy. Mm-hmm. This is my guy. And this is how far they've fallen. And the trajectory of their fall goes way back to the to Nixon and Reagan and Gingrich and so forth. But taking this slice out of the moment when everyone, all the smart pundits were saying, the GOP's finally okay. We got rid of the Palin problem. Everything's cool now. Tracking Laura Logan's collapse, complete mm-hmm. career collapse. Mm-hmm. And every step along the way, she felt she needed to stay on a camera. She needed a microphone. I need to have a spotlight. If I don't have a spotlight, I will perish. And needed to support her lifestyle, which was apparently an expensive one.
Mm-hmm.
So she followed the money down the Steve Bannon rabbit hole from which there is no return.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now,
I think if you need that much money to survive, if $700,000 contract per year mm-hmm. contract
yep.
isn't enough for you,
mm-hmm.
and then you're willing to just sell your voice for, to Mike Lindell.
Yeah. To Mike Lindell, to be an arm candy for Kyle Rittenhouse at Mar-a-Lago.
Oh my God!
Was that
embarrassing? Yeah.
I realized she's had this enormous, tragedy happen to her. This enormously horrifying thing happened to her, and something happened to her. I don't want to project psychologically what her situation is. Mm-hmm. Just this is a path that sucks broken people and foolish people and racist people and lost people all down the same hole. They all get sucked into the same vortex. And it's really hard to get out. And at some point, you cross what on a black hole would be the event horizon, mm-hmm. which is the point beyond which you can't get out. And there are about 70 million Americans plus who have crossed the event horizon who will never get out of this hole because they believe it with all their heart, which leads us, I believe, to a letter you got.
We've got a few letters to read today, but we've got a wonderful letter. Last week, we talked about Pastor Rebecca McNeil in Nebraska.
Right.
And how she had been writing op-eds on spiritual topics, as many newspapers will carry an op-ed by a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
She decided to write one after January 6th that noted that Jesus wasn't there in the mob on January 6th and that this is a problem for Christians to recognize that hurting police officers and carrying Trump banners and being brainwashed by Fox, and she mentioned that in her column, was not the Christian thing. And as a result, her column was not just not run that week. It was completely pulled from the outlet that she had previously published in. And she was not invited back. We talked about that last week. And today we got an email from the pastor herself, Rebecca McNeil. I'm so mm-hmm. pleased. She writes, a good friend texted saying she was listening to one of her favorite podcasts today when lo and behold, the story of my canceled column came up. Here's the rest of the story. Oh.
So now we're in Paul Harvey territory.
We're in Paul Harvey territory, absolutely. I'd ruffled feathers earlier when one of my columns challenged the pro-life commitment of the community if they couldn't confirm that Black Lives Matter. The publisher himself printed a 2,000-word rebuttal by a longtime daughter of the community to my 500-word column.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Apparently claiming Jesus wasn't part of the insurrection was a bridge too far. Some of the church members in Neely, Nebraska, where I also served a little church, read the column when I posted it on my blog and simply stopped talking to me. 3 years earlier, I was fired from a church in Omaha while I was on vacation. Oh, gosh. Do I know how that feels? In part because I was supportive of a group in the congregation resettling refugees from Somalia, and because the youth led a Sunday service exploring all the isms, sharing their stories of how God's love transcends and transforms boundaries. Shocking, right? I accepted the call to serve in two little UCC country churches because the UCC is more liberal than the DOC. And because I needed to stay in Nebraska until my husband, who is 5 years older than I, retired. After his retirement, I would be free to seek a church in a different part of the country. When the Nephi folks stopped talking with me, I was just done. I was tired of having to fight against the blasphemy of the Christian right. I called my pension fund to find out how old I needed to be to retire and was surprised to learn I qualified for early retirement. The next week, I announced I was retiring in 60 days. I couldn't take it anymore. Almost 40 years of ordained ministry, an earned doctoral degree in pastoral leadership, and a passion for justice. I simply couldn't do it. Nebraska used to be a state where Republicans were pragmatic conservatives. Now they're punitive and just plain mean. Sadly, due to redistribution in Colorado, where we've settled, we've traded Pete Ricketts' treachery and faux Christianity for the perverted piety of Lauren Boebert. Oh, Lord.
I'm so sorry.
Yep. Keep up your good work. God knows we need truth tellers now more than ever. Signed, Becky McNeil. So appreciate your letter and hearing from you, Becky. Thank you.
And I hope in all other matters you're enjoying Colorado. That is the state of my birth, and my brother lives there with his wife and family there. It's a beautiful state. with the same problems that a lot of other people have, which is the crazies have gotten crazier and they have become a cult, and they don't want to hear anything outside the cult, and they don't want to hear from someone. It doesn't matter that you served 40 years. It doesn't matter that you have a degree. None of that matters. You told them something they didn't want to hear.
Right.
And so you must go. You are now an apostate and you must go. That kind of leads me to a show that you and I promised we would watch one episode a day, maybe one every 2 days.
Yeah, we were going to pace ourselves and then
and
we didn't.
We're just the worst people. Yeah. We watched Under the Banner of Heaven with Andrew Garfield on Hulu, which is a true crime story based on a book by Jonathan Krakauer. About a multiple murder case in the Mormon community in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, and that's pretty much all we're going to say about it, because we don't want to spoil it. Yeah.
I don't want to – no way I'm going to spoil this for you. If you watch it, great. It was really good. I didn't think it would be really good. Parts of it are pretty violent. And I will say that somewhere in the middle of all of this, the repeated phrase – this is takes place in the 80s, 1980 through 84, let's say. There's lots of pictures of Reagan, lots of American flags, lots of blaming Jimmy Carter, socialism, and disobedient women – for all the problems in the world. But it was fascinating to watch how each group of Mormons, and there are several represented, think the people up the line from them are the fanatics. There's the tolerant group that think the people in Salt Lake City are the fanatics. And there's the Salt Lake City who think these other people are the fanatics. But you track it all the way up the line, and it really is the Republican Party.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's the mafia. Because many times we were saying this is like the mafia story.
It tracks that too. Yeah. It tracks exactly the same. There's a set of beliefs you are required to believe.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, and rigid set of beliefs
You can't stray from it. Yeah. And everyone around you believes the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a self-reinforcing group of people who all believe the same thing and all act the same way. And there is great because they'll support you. You get to go see all your friends at the Trump rally because they're your friends. But the minute you step outside the circle, suddenly the deacon comes down or the bishop comes down or whoever comes down and reminds you that we know all about your family and we know where you live and we know what you confess to. And maybe you should take your doubts and put them on a shelf. And you suddenly realize, oh, there's a hierarchy to this. And the people at the very highest level here in the Catholic Church, in the Southern Baptist Convention, in the Republican Party, are all very, very clear about their priorities. And their priorities are to protect their power, period. And they will do anything necessary to protect their power. And they have exert enormous influence over the people beneath them. And there is a mindset that if you cross them, if you stray outside of Scripture, because the thing I want to drive home really is when you are dealing with Republican voters, Republican friends, people in your life who are conservatives, there is this sort of belief that if there were just a magic set of words, if there were just some set of facts, if you could just construct the proper sentence, you could maybe convince them to step away from the crazy. And the answer is, these people, any reaction to anything in the outside world among these people in this show is, let's all pray together and find out what Holy Father wants.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not, I've been confronted by these very weird facts that conflict with my belief. Maybe we should look into that. It's like, no. Let's all pray together and make the beliefs go away. Make the doubts go away. You will
put them
never
on a shelf.
Put them on a shelf.
Put them on a shelf was the one that got me. Like,
and,
you're just supposed to actually cut out part of your thinking.
Yeah.
It off.
And part of the authority of the church is to rewrite history.
Mm-hmm.
And pretend things didn't happen the way they happened and tell mythical tales of things that absolutely are the opposite of what really happened. And if you are a good-hearted person involved in a good faith effort that runs you across one of these things, and you go and you say, well, you know, as part of my investigation, I found this stuff out. Do not expect people in authority to say, thanks for bringing that to our attention.
Right, right.
They're going to say, you know, it'd be a real shame if your family were stricken from heaven forever if you went down this road. Maybe you should pray on it and think about it. This is the mindset of Republicans. And this is why in my imaginary conversations with all my Never Trumper friends, it's like, no. You taught them not to believe anyone who tells them anything they don't want to hear.
Right.
You taught them that anyone who tells them shit they don't want to hear, no matter what their credentials are, 40 years a pastor, mm-hmm. 30 years a conservative, a solid conservative record. If you tell them anything they don't want to hear, suddenly you're an outcast. You're a liberal. You're an apostate. Get the fuck mm-hmm. out of here. Mm-hmm. So why do you keep lying to yourself and pretending that you can tell them things they don't want to hear when you train them not to listen to anyone who tells them anything they don't want to hear?
Specifically, Fox News developed their audience.
Yes,
their
absolutely.
Loyal audience by telling them, you won't hear this anywhere else but Fox News.
Can't
but
trust
why them. Don't why listen to any other source but us? Because we're the ones giving you the basically the gospel. You know, if you leave Fox, you're walking on thin ice and you'll fall into the liberal mm-hmm. way of doing things. Right?
And as long as that machinery was working for you, mm-hmm. it was fine. Mm-hmm. As long as all the outgoing fire was directed at miserable, commie, Carter-loving, disobedient women like you and me, as long as you were hating those people, all that hatred was fine with every Never Trumper you know, every Republican you know, saw nothing wrong with it because those outsiders are out to destroy us. Mm-hmm. Remember, the single most common theme going back to Nixon is the liberals are out to destroy us. The mm-hmm. liberal media is out to kill us. The liberal media wants to give your money to welfare queens. Liberals are the enemy. Enemy, 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 enemy.
The Newt Gingrich playbook. Yeah.
The Newt Gingrich playbook. The Spiro Agnew playbook.
Yeah.
The Reagan playbook, honestly, because welfare queens got to get their money from somewhere. And you know where they're getting it from? Those stinking liberals in Congress, which is why government is the problem. And after having – and as long as they were hating liberals, it was fine. But the minute they stepped outside that charmed circle, when it got to be too much for them or they got run out of the party or they said the wrong thing or they thought they could criticize Donald Trump and they found out they couldn't, suddenly – that machine was turned on them. And suddenly it was a bad thing. Oh my God. Oh my God. What happened to my party? Nothing happened to your party. It's exactly the party you were always a part of. You're on the outside now living the life of a liberal. And now you're starting to feel the kind of constant, relentless, vicious, overwhelming machine-like attack on everything you think about, every step you take that we've been going through for our entire lives.
And, Driftglass.
Yes.
Speaking of liberals, we've got some letters from a couple liberals.
You know how we love letters. Yes. Talk me down off my soapbox, Blue Gal.
Yes, let's I'm going to do that because we're not going to go an hour and 24 minutes today.
Hell no.
Hello, Blue Gal and Drifty. This is from Chuck in New York City. Thank you so much for the 1+ hour of sanity. Now, see, there you go.
That sounds about right.
You're counter messaging me there, Chuck, but that's okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for the 1+ hour of sanity that is your weekly podcast. I listen to it every Friday morning and usually replay it at some point over the weekend. Well, thank you, Chuck. The clarity and encouragement that you provide are truly appreciated, even here in the heart of Manhattan's solid blue Upper West Side. And even here, as you have probably read, we have our challenges this election cycle. I and my neighborhood Democratic Club will be campaigning actively in 2 primaries. The first will be on June 28th for governor and other local offices. The second will be in August for state Senate and U.S. Congress. And that one, thanks to redistricting, will pit our beloved Jerry Nadler against our beloved Carolyn Maloney. Oh, I hate it when that happens.
I do too.
2 very popular Democrats who've been shoved together in one district. And if that's not enough, we will also be traveling every weekend to other districts in Pennsylvania and on Long Island to knock on voters' doors. That's just fantastic, Chuck. Mm-hmm. Thanks again, and know that by keeping on with the podcast, you help the rest of us keep going as well. Thank you. That's wonderful work. I'm so glad to hear that you're, I know that people in that part of the country, you know, you've got New Jersey and Pennsylvania and New York, that part of New York are all very drivable, and going around the weekend to knock on doors for other candidates is fantastic.
It is. So is he part of a caravan who's going to be doing this?
We don't know. He's part. Yeah, I'm sure it's Fox News would like to cover him as part of a caravan. Yeah. Okay, then we heard from some more New Yorkers. This is from Bruce. And
hey, Bruce.
Bruce and Suzanne. And Bruce and Suzanne say, Yahoo! Congratulate us and join in our celebration. We are now in the Congressional District 20, and no longer in New York Congressional District 21, we have officially dumped Elise Stefanik.
Yay!
Yay, congratulations. Now the folks in New York Congressional District 21 have to vote her out of office. Yeah. That's right. You know, some of this redistricting, as we've talked about with Junior Dude, means that there are actually safer districts for Republicans, because what Democratic legislators want to do is cram the Republicans into as few districts as possible. So if at least Stefan, that way they get more Democratic districts. Mm-hmm. I don't know what 21 is now, but I imagine that at least Stefanik is getting a lot of money from people other than Donald Trump, but she's got Trump's endorsement big time, et cetera. So, because she's a good little girl. Okay.
She was willing to spin 180 degrees around the minute she smelled an opening with Liz Cheney.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep. Drift Class, do you think Louie Gohmert reads your blog?
I am 100% certain Louie Gohmert reads mine.
Really?
I have a statistic counter that tracks, that surveils everyone who reads my blog, as you know.
No.
Activate your home camera so I can see what you're doing all the time.
No.
Put that COVID chip in your neck.
No.
Boom. I'm on it.
Not.
So last week was the week that Louie Gohmert, being Louie Gohmert, said, for real, if you're
real.
A Republican. For real. He really, really said this because he's Louie Gohmert and it's his safe space. He was on Fox News or something. If you're a Republican, you can't even lie to Congress or lie to an FBI agent or they're coming after you. Of course you're going to lie. Everybody lies. That's an abbreviated version, but that's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
A few days before that, I had written for the umpteenth time why it was useless to try to reason with Republicans, because no matter how red-handed you catch them in their lying, their final alibi, their final excuse is always, and this is a quote from my blog, you know, both sides lie. Lefties are no better. They're usually worse. And if I hadn't written the same thing in 2005 a dozen times and 6 and 7 and 12 and 14, et cetera, then that might be a revelation. But everyone listening to this podcast knows that. Because no matter how crazy, no matter how much of a hardcore culture warrior lunatic you're dealing with, You back him into a corner, you get him caught red-handed, and what comes out of their mouth is David fucking Brooks.
Yep.
Every time. That is their safe house. That is their hold, their fortress. They know that's indestructible because all the other territory they want to fight over is Fox News territory. But once they go to the both sides territory, they can get the New York Times to defend them.
Right.
They can get the Washington Post to defend them. So they don't have to worry about being attacked because, well, you know, both sides do it. And really, lefties
are worse. You mean the New York Times that wants to know how men feel about the abortion issue?
Oh, yeah.
What is your experience with abortion? Yeah.
That Ohio diner. That goddamn Ohio diner. So it's their helms deep. But it's
interesting, Driftglass, isn't it, that the arrest of Peter Navarro.
Yes.
And actually putting him in a cell.
Yes.
Freaked people like Louis Gohmert the fuck out.
Well, because he wears a suit and he's buttoned down and he's respectable.
He's white and part of their tribe. And you don't touch people like that.
No.
People don't have consequences that go to going to jail.
No, what you need to do is form a circle and pray on it, and then you'll be fine. But you don't actually have to, you know, go to jail for shit. That's crazy.
All right. I'm going to take podcaster privilege for a moment.
Sure.
And tell some personal stories, because last Saturday was youngest child's graduation from high school.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I'm so proud of her. She got her moment, and she deserved her moment. She did better than her siblings in terms of grades and honors at the high school graduation. She was cum laude. She was near the front of the line in terms of getting her diploma because of the honors that she received. And so we're very, very proud of her. In addition to the graduation ceremony, there were a couple of moments that jumped out at me that were not related to my pride in my child. There was a speech by the valedictorian that was very good. It was about not getting into a preschool gifted program.
Yep.
And being told, you don't want to go to this high school.
Right. This is the bad high school.
This is the bad high school. You don't want to go here. She wound up the valedictorian. She's going to Northwestern in the pre-med actual path. I mean, just like they just sucked her right into, you're going to be a doctor. She's just so accomplished. She's just so accomplished.
Yeah.
She's on the track at Northwestern, which is an amazing school, very hard to get into. Mm-hmm. And she just gave this wonderful speech about overcoming expectations of what people in authority tell you is best for you or who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And to ignore those negative voices and do, you know, keep your eye on what you want and what your goals are and so forth. It was just a lovely speech.
Yeah.
I was sitting next to middle child. And I have to tell you a little story about this, because we have a poster on our wall in our hallway. It is at the bottom of the stairs as the children come down the stairs from their bedrooms upstairs. Our bedroom is on the first floor in the back, and they have upstairs two bedrooms and a half bath. So, but when they come down the stairs, there's this poster on the wall that is laminated.
This next to the Lord's Prayer.
It's next to the Lord's. I have the Lord's Prayer on the wall too.
Yeah.
That's beside the point. and this poster says it's got the school seal on it, and it's got wisdom from blank schools, professors or teachers. Teachers want you to succeed. Here is words of wisdom, etc. And then in the middle of the poster, it says, you know, this quote from this teacher is endeavor to persevere.
Yeah. Try to try.
And the thing is, middle child stole this poster from school.
Yes, she did. Straight up stole it. Yep. Straight she up, did.
Ripped it off the wall and brought it home.
Yes, she did.
And she said, I brought it home. I stole it and I brought it home because it is the stupidest statement I've ever seen. Endeavor to persevere, like try to keep going, is supposed to be the inspirational line from the faculty at my school. Is try to keep going, try to survive. That's my advice that this school wants to give me.
Well, just as an aside, we have a joke cheerleading song that we would sing to her every time she was like, and our song was "Don't Mess Up,
Don't Mess Up." She's the perfectionist of the family.
Yeah, she is. And it was a joke.
Very hard on herself. So. Yeah. And we had a sign that we took to graduation because there is the high school class is the Spartans. And on their sign, their light up sign outside their school, it always says, "It's a great day to be a successful Spartan." And that has been a running joke for 10 years in our family.
10 years. Yeah.
Since Junior Dude was a freshman.
Yeah.
We have had, "It's a great day to be a successful Spartan," you know, as we wave out the door. And of course, they just want to roll their eyes and so forth. So I put that on a sign to take to graduation as a joke. So, but I turned to middle child during the ceremony and I said, "Endeavor to persevere." And she looked back at me. She said, "Oh, he got fired."
Just
"Endeavor to persevere got fired."
With that comic time, with that comic timing she's been working on since she was five.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And I said, "You're kidding. What did he get fired for?" And I thought, oh God, this is going to be really bad. Because, you know, was he involved with a student or something horrible? Did something horrible? He refused to get vaccinated and he refused to get tested and he refused to do anything involved with COVID. He's a science teacher.
Right.
He teaches physics.
Taught physics, past tense. Yeah.
Physics. He's fired. Yeah. He got fired. And then she said to me, "He's the one that told me to my face that girls don't do as well in physical sciences."
Yeah.
This is the math computer science major at Beloit College now.
Right. Right. He also was a climate change denier, right?
Oh, he was a climate change denier, too. Yeah. I mean, she just kept going on. She said, but her point was, he's no longer at the school. But look, we're keeping that poster up because now I look at him and I go, he was fired.
He was fired. Well, another way to look at it is the woke mob has driven another good man from his job, earned.
That was the other question I asked her, was like, how did he have a career in teaching all these years? And she said he didn't.
Right.
You know, just decided that he would go into teaching late in life because I want something to do and have some money. And, you know,
they were desperate.
They were desperate. And so watch out for that desperation. I'm sure he's real upset about Peter Navarro getting arrested too.
Sitting at home just seething. That woke mob came for me just like they came for you, Peter Navarro. You and I, bros before hoes, man.
Yeah. Endeavor to persevere, Peter Navarro.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also wanted to mention in our notes we have about healthcare. It is really important to recognize that Democrats did take the emergency of the pandemic to get some things done that needed to be done and needed to be done for a long time.
Yes.
We needed to find a way to make health insurance premiums affordable to those people in that kind of donut hole. I mean, it's not technically the donut hole. And please, I know the health insurance nerds are out there saying, don't use donut hole. But the people that are
in between, caught
a little too wealthy for subsidies and not there yet for Medicare. And a lot of early retirees are in that wealth contingent. And I say wealth because they are wealthier than we are. Mm-hmm. But they can't afford health insurance because they're over 55. They have enough money from pension or whatever to have a comfortable living. But if you throw on top of that a $2,000 a month health insurance bill,
boom.
They cannot afford that. And people can't afford that. And that's what health insurance costs without a subsidy for those people.
For a person, not a family. Person.
No, yeah. Yeah. No, it's $1,000 a month per person. If you're a couple and, you know, together you have, and I forget what the cutoff is. It's in the $100,000 to $150,000 a year range, which in some parts of the country is a tremendous amount of money. In other parts of the country, you're barely getting by on that amount of money. But regardless, if you add a $1,000 a month per person bill and no subsidy, you can't afford health insurance. Right. That's more than most people's mortgages.
And let's be clear, this is stuff that Democrats did.
They added for 2 years a subsidy so that those people, many of them older than 55, would be able to afford premiums.
Right.
That's going away in January if Congress doesn't act. And of course, Manchin doesn't want to act because deficit. You know, he votes for tax cuts, but not this. So that is I've seen a lot of press about this, that this is looming. The other thing is school lunches for children in the summertime.
Right.
Now, some states do fund that and some districts do fund that. Mm-hmm. But this has been a federal program giving children SNAP benefits and giving children school lunch benefits in the summer, and making school lunches free universally is just a really good idea. It ensures a meal for kids with no hoops to jump through. And again, Republicans just let that lapse.
Well, and summer programs for kids used to be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I mean, there used to be, I worked for the city of Chicago. That's not a mystery. Before I was there, there was always funding from the federal government for summer programs for kids. And the number of people I knew who worked at the city or knew in the city who had gotten their first job as a lifeguard or as somebody who picks up trash in the park or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the goal was not, you know, teaching kids these values of working, et cetera. That was a nice benefit.
Just keep out of trouble.
Just keep out of trouble. They're 3 months, 2.5 months a year. They got nothing but time, and that's not good. So we're going to keep them busy doing important stuff, teaching them some skills and putting some money in their pockets. And this was seen as like universally this was uncontroversial. Well, that's of course that's a great idea. Who wouldn't want to do that? And now it's a fucking, you know, knife fight every time you want to do anything good for anyone, even if it's stuff that's proven to be effective over decades. So
yeah.
Just appalling.
We're failing our children.
Yeah.
Adults are, as the person on Twitter who said adults are failing their children is exactly correct. Yep. And just because the boomer generation's children are now adults and can't afford to have kids right now, so there aren't enough grandchildren that you care. It's the what's in it for me mindset. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the majority of public school children these days are non-white.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you look at any picture of youngest child's graduation crew.
Oh, and all her buddies.
And all of, you know, these are people, woman who flew in from Texas just to be with her former students. Mm-hmm. And took them all out to dinner.
And she took them all out to dinner and they had a great time. But it looked picture, like America. It looked like around America. The table. Yeah.
It did not look like, you know, it did not look like CPAC. It looked like America.
No, it looked like America. Exactly.
And that's one of the reasons you put her in that school. I mean,
absolutely. The reason that I bused our kids to the other side of the tracks, in part because apart from endeavor to persevere, the faculty at that school, at that high school, are people, you know, I would go to open house and meet each one of the kids' teachers every year. And the question that I always ask them, in addition to what the curriculum is and make sure that they're not teaching CRT, you know how I am.
Well, let's be fair. One of the teachers did have Howard Zinn on every desk.
Howard Zinn on every desk. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. He did. But the questions that I ask, in addition to what are you teaching my child and what do you expect of them and what how can I help, was, you know, how long have you been teaching here? And, you know, what is your, and by asking that, I'm leaving that as an open question to find out what their commitment to the teaching profession is, because I have a degree in education myself. And I would tell them that. I said, I was a, you know, high school history certified teacher. So I know where you are, you know, I've been where you are in the classroom and so forth. And finding out that these teachers have taught there for 22 years. There were no teachers in that school that I met who had my kids who had taught there for less than 12 years. So we had experienced faculty committed to teaching, committed to these kids. And like you say, one of youngest child's teachers who left and moved to Texas because of her husband and family and a lot of other things going on, flew back for graduation because the students that she had freshman year were graduating.
Yeah, these were her kids.
Those were her kids. That was her first year teaching.
Yep.
She didn't. It was unfortunate that she had to move away. Uh-huh. These were her kids. They FaceTimed her during prom.
Yeah.
And said, look, here we are at prom, Mrs. So-and-so, ha, 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 ha. And she replied, and I know this because there were screenshots all over youngest child's Facebook page because she was bragging on the fact that this teacher said to her, you know I'm in Texas. I know I'm just out here in my backyard grilling, but you guys behave yourselves or I will pull up. And it's like, she's watching them. She has a level of expectation of behavior for them that they know they're accountable to her. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was looking for. And so bussing them to the black side of town, which is what Springfield, Illinois is segregated.
There's a literal tracks running through town, that's, and one side or the other. You know,
that is the geographic and demographic case about this town. And I hate it. But the way that I can help fix that is investigate the schools, make sure they're good schools for my kids, and make sure that I'm not going to move to Chatham, which is the white flight community that has really well-funded schools.
Yeah, it's,
Man, their stadium?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So, but that wasn't what I wanted for my kids. I wanted my kids to grow up in the real world. And they have wonderful friends and wonderful teachers. And it's amazing the, not only the variety of careers that these kids are going into, but the acceptance, and I know they get this in part from you, Driftglass, but the acceptance that youngest child in particular, but all of the kids have, that every career track is valuable.
Yes.
And that going to college isn't for everybody.
Right.
And there were people going into, you know, the trades, plumbing and HVAC and truck repair and so forth. And because we have a very active and good community college here in Springfield, there were a lot of people going to that to learn a trade so they would have a job that can't be outsourced. You know, repairing semi trucks is a growth industry that is not going away. Right. HVAC is a growing industry that's not going away. So
manufacturing still vital and important.
Right, and doesn't get exported. Those kind of things don't get exported. Those jobs don't go overseas. So
exactly. There's honor in all of that.
And then nursing. The number of friends of youngest child who are going into home health care, testing, you know, blood testing and clinical, someone's going into like clinical biology testing, something where there's a certificate.
Right.
Where they'll go and they know how to deal with cleanliness of test tubes and how to draw blood and how to do the tests, you know, come back with the results and so forth. It's just, those are careers, and those careers don't require 4 years of college. And so they are learning these trades. But the honor that youngest child gave all of those, and of course, she's going to an honor school and she's going to major in psychology and she's already planning literally for 9 years of education.
Yes.
You know, she's not done. But she values what everyone's doing. And she learned that from the teachers there, that every career is a valuable one.
I sat down with middle child and told her girls cannot do science. They just,
you must endeavor to persevere. Right?
You have a lady brain. It's not your fault. You have a lady brain, but you can't do math and you can't do science. Maybe home ec. There's a lovely home ec course out there somewhere you could do. And she rolled her eyes and went back to reading Proust or something. So, you know,
They're going on a car trip and I think they're going to be listening to Elie Mystel's audiobook on the way.
Absolutely. Now, do you want to talk about Reverend Raphael Warnock?
I want to talk about Raphael Warnock's youthful ward, Dick Grayson. Oh, no, wait. I mean, Senator John Ossoff.
John Ossoff. Yes. Yeah.
Because he works for a living. And watching his Twitter stream, he has successfully secured restored protection of the National Wildlife Refuge. He's working on a bid for Georgia for hydrogen energy investment. Now, they're bidding against other states but George is in the game because of John Ossoff. That's very cool. And then he visited Turner County in southwest Georgia, which is primarily peanut farms, to talk to peanut farmers about drought amelioration and other concerns. And he encouraged other farmers to contact his office if they have concerns. I looked up this county that he went to. It has 8,000 people, and their county is dropping in population by 200 people every year since like 2011. So something's happening there where no one's moving in, young people are leaving, people are dying off, and that's a problem. And that shows economic deterioration as well as just the population. But he is really running his Senate office like a congressman. He's doing so much constituent services statewide. And like Ohio, where a popular senator like Sherrod Brown is coming up next to Tim Ryan and helping as a team to get Tim Ryan elected to the Senate. And actually, Tim Ryan and John Fetterman in Pennsylvania have done some ads together about how they used to have mullets, you know. So there's much more of a teamwork approach to campaigning. And when you see Warnock, who had to run again this year because he was filling a seat, you know, he has to run right away. But pairing that with Ossoff and seeing them working together as a team so that you keep the team together. And so you reelect Ossoff because, excuse me, you reelect Raphael Warnock because you keep Democratic senators representing Georgia, both of them. And, you know, I tweeted this week that Ossoff must have missed Mitch McConnell's training session where senators don't do anything.
Right.
What are you doing? All you do is block stuff. That's your job. Block everything. That's your job. And he's not doing that. He's very engaged.
I just see Lindsey Graham fanning himself going, for God's sake, sit down. You're making us look bad. Stop doing stuff.
I feel exhausted. You're giving me the vapors. Right. Right. So, yeah, it's really great to see that. And I do think that's what happened. You know, Ossoff was a congressman for a very short time before he became senator. And I think he just transported his House staff over to the Senate. And he's still working the same way. And and it's fantastic to see that, because that really does make a difference in people's lives to know that you're keeping in touch with your constituents. There was a beautiful video I did retweet as well of a woman in a pillow factory in Georgia that employs 100 people. And during the pandemic, the trucks that were going to take the pillows away to market stopped running. And so their factory was in big trouble, and they were able to get a PPE loan because John Ossoff's staff helped them fill out the application. It was as simple as it wasn't pulling strings or making someone do something. The barrier for them was they didn't know which paperwork they needed to fill out.
Yeah, that's simple. Constituent services, that's simple.
Yep. One last thing, Driftglass.
Okay.
And this is another Midwest story.
Oh, yeah.
Iowa. There were some nice ladies from Iowa who wanted to talk to their Senator Chuck Grassley about gas prices. So they drove 900 miles from Iowa to Washington, D.C.
And back.
They haven't heard of Zoom?
No.
I guess Chuck Grassley doesn't Zoom.
No. He just wants to know. Is this a vote? Is this a pudding bill? Am I supposed to vote on the pudding? No, Chuck. This is
the soup bill.
Yeah. These three nice ladies voted, came all the way from Iowa and are going to drive back in their cars to complain about gas prices. Oh, that's a real problem. All right. Let me tell you. Gas prices. Now, I remember back when Teddy Roosevelt first told me I couldn't put no gas in my flivver, and I had to have a fight with him. And I punched him in his glasses, and down he went. And that's the last anyone ever heard of Teddy Roosevelt. And then then comes nap time. So, you know, I'm glad.
He's running for re-election, Driftglass.
Hey, look, constituent services, honey. He's willing to sit in his office.
In his office with people that drive to him from Iowa.
To complain about something that Republicans voted against.
Over and over again.
Over and over again. Voted. There are all kinds of bills out there. look, if something costs a dollar 2 years ago and it costs $2 now and the company is making no additional profit, that's because of inflation.
Yeah.
If it costs $2 now and the company is reporting $70 billion in profit, Right. Guess where the dollar is going?
Guess it's who's not- got that extra $4 you're paying in gas?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If it was $1.50 during the pandemic and mm-hmm. Trump is begging OPEC to stop producing oil
so the price doesn't fall and the
price for a barrel of oil drops below zero in Oklahoma during the pandemic.
Well, fuck Oklahoma. It's Putin's problem. Putin's whole economy depends on oil. I can't let my friend Vladimir go broke. So let's create an artificial shortage because no one's driving anywhere. And this is like bragging that people watched more Netflix during the pandemic.
Yes, they
couldn't leave their home, you asshole. People drove less. That's why gas cost less. And now,
the things that are really costing a lot this summer mm-hmm. are driving mm-hmm. and hotels.
Yes.
And rental cars.
Yes.
And vacation spots.
Yes.
And yes, groceries are going up because of gas prices. But look at the profit margins of oil companies. Mm-hmm. That's where the money's going. It's not going to inflation. They want to make their money back, the money that they lost during the pandemic.
Right. That's as simple as that. And
for their shareholders. Yes.
So the $600 check you got to help you feed your family when mm-hmm. your business shut down during a global pandemic is not the reason why gas prices are $5 and higher. It just isn't.
Yep.
And the money that was voted on to get infrastructure projects started is not the inflation money. Most of that money isn't spent. It's sitting out there waiting to be spent. Secondly, it's going to be spent on roads and bridges and other things that we should have been investing in for the last 30 years anyway.
40 years.
Yeah.
How about a news roundup, Driftglass?
Yeah. Well, speaking of our president, Joe Biden, he invoked the Defense Production Act to boost domestic production of solar panels and their parts in an effort to shift the country towards clean energy. He didn't say, and we're going to cut off everyone's oil and no one can drive anymore. He's just talking about we will need to transition to this stuff quickly and efficiently. And the best way to do that is to crank up production and get it out there. Also, it creates jobs.
Yep. Joe Biden is expected to announce in July or August about partially forgiving student loan debt for 40 million borrowers who owe about $1.6 trillion. Earlier this year, Biden extended the pandemic-related pause in federal student loan payments through the end of August. And we hope he's able to forgive as much as absolutely possible.
Yes, we do. And he did promise in his campaign to forgive some student debt. He did not, whatever your memory tells you, promise to wipe it all out. I'd like him to. That'd be great. But the problems will persist because college will still charge an arm and a leg for tuition.
Yeah, and I think there needs to be reform in terms of the whole picture of funding colleges and how that's done. If you're going to take student loan money to fund your college, you can't become a trust fund and have this huge, enormous, tax-free endowment that all of your trustees sit on. You know, that's just not how. And then you hire adjuncts.
Right.
Health insurance to your teachers. Yeah.
Speaking as an adjunct.
Yeah.
A person who taught as an adjunct at Columbia College for several years, that money was not going to us.
Yeah.
It was a no benefits, no vacation, no perks, no overtime job. And we had people who would stay at a hotel or mm-hmm. motel up on the north side and teach at three colleges just to make ends meet.
Right.
So the money's not going there.
If you're getting guaranteed federal student loan money or grants to fund your school, you've got to be a union shop.
Yeah, and you really do.
You've got to treat your teachers and your student athletes and your student workers with respect.
You do.
There's got to be strings on that money. Okay.
New Yorkers under the age of 21 are now prohibited from buying semi-automatic rifles under a new law signed Monday by Governor Kathy Hochul, making the state among the first to enact a major gun control initiative following the wave of deadly mass shootings. Hochul, a Democrat, signed 10 public safety-related bills, including one that will require micro-stamping in new firearms, which could help law enforcement solve gun-related crimes. Another revision to the state's red flag laws, which allow the courts to temporarily take guns away from people who might be a threat to themselves or others. What the rest of the universe considers the minimum possible response to this madness is now the law in New York, thanks to the Democrats.
The U.S. has wasted 82.1 million COVID-19 vaccine doses, just over 11% of the doses the federal government distributed. CVS and Walmart were responsible for over a quarter of the doses thrown away.
Yep.
The rest of the world should be really pissed at us.
Yeah, they really should. Mike Pence's chief of staff reportedly warned the Secret Service on January 5th that Trump was going to publicly turn against the vice president and there could be a security risk because of it.
The Justice Department charged the former top leader of the Proud Boys extremist group and four other members with seditious conspiracy for their role in the January 6th insurrection.
That's a very, very serious charge.
And not one that is handed out ever.
No, that's 44% of Republican respondents said that deadly mass shootings in the United States are something that must be accepted as part of a free society. 85% of Democrats and 73% of independents, meanwhile, said mass shootings are, quote, something we can prevent and stop if we really tried.
55% of Americans identify as pro-choice, up 6 percentage points following the leaked Supreme Court draft opinion that would strike down Roe v. Wade. And there is talk, we are recording on Wednesday, there's talk that this draft opinion might become the opinion as of Thursday. Yep. We do not know that as of this recording.
No, we don't.
Pro-choice sentiment, however, is at its highest level since 1995, when it was 56%.
And it's official. The Fox News main channel will not be carrying the January 6th hearings live. Hearings which Fox News has now officially tagged as shams. As Laura Ingraham told Stephen Miller, God, that sentence hurts my mouth to say, on her White Power Hour show, they're all upset that Fox isn't covering it live. We actually do something called, you know, cater to our audience. Yes,
cater they do. To our audience. Is that what she calls it?
That's what she calls it.
Mm-hmm. Our political media sewer is so polluted that this week other reporters felt the need to report that it was not Peter Ducey asking the ghoulish asshole wingnut question of the day when Matthew McConaughey was talking about the damage that a gun can do to a child. Mm-hmm. And a reporter asked him if he was grandstanding.
Yeah.
And it was not Peter Ducey.
Mm-hmm. And people felt the need to say, this one, not Ducey.
Right.
Yeah. That's how bad things are. Kyle Rittenhouse, the Republican child vigilante who was celebrated by Fox News and Donald Trump for grabbing the gun his mommy bought him and driving to another state to kill people, is once again playing the victim. It seems his shitty grades are the result of his high school career being, quote, robbed from him. And he didn't have the time other students had to properly prepare for his future, which is why he's forced to go to a shitty fourth-tier college. On Fox News, the creepy teenager death muppet added, we're going to make the media pay for what they did to me. And you just know that right now, somewhere inside Newsmax headquarters, someone is pitching a Morning Kyle show with Rittenhouse and Laura Logan as Newsmax's very own Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski power couple.
Do you want to read the local news, Driftglass?
Sure. This is local news because we bring you local news. It's from a site called Springfield Leaks, which publishes all the dirt around here. Thomas, and they're pretty good at it. Thomas DeVore is on the ballot in the Republican primary on June 28th this year for the office of Attorney General of Illinois. Thomas DeVore has also been credibly accused of having a sexual relationship with a married 27-year-old woman. While legally representing her during the COVID-19 mask mandates and business shutdowns. According to police reports and body camera footage that Springfield Leaks obtained, DeVore, who is 52, is being accused by the family of a 27-year-old woman of manipulating her and telling her she would receive a big settlement from the state in order to have her doing things. According to a recent incident report, there was a disturbance between DeVore and his girlfriend, Riley N. Craig, age 27, that required police response while they were staying at the President Lincoln Hotel in downtown Springfield of April of this year. The disturbance pulled in her parents, her ex. It was a shit show. And this guy is a fucking lunatic. And
in the Illinois Republican Party, we call this an uh-oh.
An uh-oh. Well, I believe someone has said primary is going to be lit. Now, honestly.
Yes.
I did not have 52-year-old creeping on a 27-year-old and telling her, I'll get you a big payment if you do things for me. Uh-huh. I was not on my bingo card. But some shit like that's always on the card somewhere. There should be a category called miscellaneous horrible shit Republicans do. And that's the end of our news.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Butterscotch. Oh. And Butterscotch has gainful employment. He has the important job of guarding the family car by sitting on its roof. Ooh. And of course, Butterscotch, who, by the way, we hear is a connoisseur of freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store direct, your cats will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Butterscotch at our Facebook page or website. Butterscotch is doing their job in this photo.
Mm-hmm.
And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise, hashtag fire DeJoy. I know there were some people that missed us saying that last week. We actually did talk about the Nancy Reagan stamp and how horrible it was to do something like that ever, let alone during Pride Month. Let me say it again. Fire DeJoy. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job. And we love doing this podcast. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can, too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Our PayPal postal address information, all of it is there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media. And if you love this podcast, send us $5. That's a great way to give us feedback on specific shows that you love.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties will not be watching the migrant caravan of Hunter Biden laptops coverage on Fox.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2022, DGBG Productions Incorporated.